Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
What's up? Hour number two on the show. Tiki and Tierney, hanging in. That's all you can do. Hang it in. Moving on. Moving forward. We got you here. Two more hours, so we'll keep it loose. Keep it light. As we said, happy hour is open early. Give yourself a nice heavy pour. We obviously can't drink on the air. As soon as the show is over, I'm getting drunk. I'm just telling you right now. I was sniffing the Hennessy that I have not opened. That's been in my office for probably about 6 months ago. That was shipped to the studio. That thing is going to be dented after tonight. I'll tell you that right now. But Tegan Irons, our studio, still a little bit of a different studio as we are at our respective homes. But it is the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio, who understands it's not just a mortgage, but it's your mortgage. That's the difference. Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. Antique, the scheme on HBO was phenomenal. You and I devoted a lot of time to that yesterday with Will Wade and Sean Miller at Arizona. And, of course, the just the riveting components of the documentary, which aired a couple of nights ago. And we are lucky enough to have the director, and his name is Pat Kondilis, and he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney. This thing is spreading like wildfire. He's got a real hit on his hands. Pat, how are you today, buddy? Tiki and Tierney, what's going on, man?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Doing okay. You've got the double. I mean, you got the double gold here. Number one, you've got an incredibly interesting story, but then you turn on the camera, and Christian Dawkins just goes to work, man. He's a very engaging, very cerebral, presents his words with great imagery, if you will. I mean, as this thing is unfolding, as you're recording this, you have to be sitting there saying, oh, this is a home run. We're good to go.
Yeah, Christian's, Christian's obviously he's incredibly engaging. He's captivating when he starts talking. And, I've described him to people that haven't seen it or I've never met him. Like, the best way I can think to describe Christian is he's like a combination between Ferris Bueller and Frank Abagnale of Catch Me If You Can. he's a very, very unique individual. Very, very smart, very intelligent, very mature for his age, and hilarious too. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally.
How did this project come about for you, Pat?
Came about. I got a call from Peter Nelson of HBO Sports, and we had been discussing some other projects. And he brought this up, this story, and I remembered when that press conference happened, and then nothing really came of it. And so, look, I was interested in meeting Christian when Peter brought it up, and I flew out and spent 3 days with Christian. And as soon as I met him and we started having conversations, his perspective was fascinating. And it was the story that he told was far different than what I had been reading. And he was far different than the person that was described in a lot of these reports. So after spending time with him, I was like, this story is absolutely bonkers. It's unbelievable. And very quickly, I understood that this is much bigger than just a sports story. So after meeting him, I was all in on this.
Yeah, no, that makes sense because it is much bigger than a sports story because of how charismatic he is and a hustler. I mean, he's been doing it since he was a teenager, trying to find ways to get in on business endeavors. The question I had out of this, though, and I think a lot of people did as well, Pat, was how many Christian Dawkins are there in the world of college sports? Because he's not the only one, obviously, but how big is this?
I think it's very big, and I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot. I don't think there's too many guys that are able to get to the level that Christian was able to get to at such a young age. But it's very clear that this is the norm, right? Mm-hmm. This is not the exception. So I think there's a lot, and I think there's going to continue to be a lot because this system in place now works for everybody at the top, and I don't see it really changing anytime soon.
Pat, I'm curious, and we're talking to Pat Condilis, the director of HBO's The Scheme, which obviously has been a great talking point for a couple of days, and Pat did a great job. He's got a couple of Emmys on his shelf, so he's coming from good stock. How would you describe your level of sports fandom, whether it's basketball or anything? Are you a big fan or no?
I am a big fan, yes, absolutely.
Okay, so with that in mind, when you hear the wiretaps and you uncover the intimate conversations, are you a little surprised at the depths in which how murky the waters are? And are you disappointed as a sports fan that that's what really happens?
No, I'm not disappointed. I mean, I think, look, there's been so many scandals previously, right? You go back to like SMU. I mean, I did, a documentary called Disgrace that went into the Baylor basketball scandal and a murder of, Patrick Dennehy by a teammate and the cover-up and all that.
Oh, yeah.
You look at UNC, when their fake courses that they had just a couple mm-hmm. of years ago. Louisville's had, X number of scandals. I mean, this happens all the time. So I certainly was not naive to, look, this is the way that it works. The one thing that really surprised me, though, was the amount of money that some of these kids were getting offered by schools that were not like traditional powerhouse schools.
Yeah.
One of the federal trials, I think it was Oklahoma State, offered Brian Bowen Jr. $150,000 in cash, an $80,000 car, and a house.
Wow.
And the Oregon number is described as astronomical. I've been told it was over $200,000, for 1 year to go there. That was very surprising to learn some of the dollar amounts that were being thrown around.
Pat, where did you understand that this money came from? Is it from, because with Christian, it seemed like there was a financial advisor involved and, shoe
yeah.
companies. And like, but where ultimately does all of this funding come from?
And so, that was one interesting thing about this is that we learned that there's a million different ways to execute a deal like this, right? So in Brian Bowen's specific case, you had Adidas, right? They're a flagship school. They sponsor Louisville to the tune of $160 million. So they want to help their flagship school get top talent. So they offered the money, right? They offered $100,000 mm-hmm. to pay to Brian Bowen's family so that he would commit there. So you have shoe companies doing it. You have boosters doing it. You have coaches that will pay out of their own pocket.
Wow.
And then you can have financial advisors and agents also front serious money to some of these kids, again, in the hopes that, if they make it to the draft, they would then, sign a deal with these agents or financial advisors. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. I don't know if there was one specific standard way of a deal being done.
Go ahead, Teak. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask about the FBI side of this because we talked about it significantly yesterday about how this felt like the FBI enforcing NCAA rules. Like there's no, maybe some wire fraud and things of that nature and tax evasion possibly, but it felt like the FBI was doing the job of the NCAA from watching this documentary that you put out. But why did the FBI get so deep into this? I know they didn't comment, obviously, but why did they get so deep into this and make this, like a promotional offense or promotional case for somebody, the Southern District?
I think you described it perfectly. Like what ended up happening is that they became an enforcement arm for a nonprofit. Right? The NCAA is a nonprofit organization, and their rules, if you violate the rules of a nonprofit organization, how in the world can you say that's a federal crime?
Yeah.
And they really, I think, had to reach to get to the level of it being a crime, which is why in the doc you can hear on the wiretaps there's a really strong disagreement between Christian and his partners, who he doesn't know are undercover FBI agents, and as which business model is the most efficient. Christian had wanted to pay players and pay their handlers and their families. That was the best way that he thought it should be moving forward, where obviously the FBI is saying, no, you have to pay the coaches because that's critical for them to actually get a bribery case, right? And the narrative that they have pushed is that these coaches are representatives. They're public officials because they work for state institutions. So if you give money to a coach who's being looked at as a public official, then in theory that's bribery. Now the irony here is that Christian was saying the whole time he didn't want to do that. And the interesting thing about this was that was one of the biggest questions I had was, what was the origin of this? Like, where did this come from? And then you get into the whole Marty Blazer situation, and you learn that a guy who's a pretty substantial criminal who stole millions of dollars threw this idea against the wall in hopes that it would, you know, he could avoid prison time for it.
Wow.
And it's a pretty jaw-dropping and absurd scenario that that started this whole thing in motion.
So we're talking to Pat Kandelis, who's an award-winning director and producer, obviously The Scheme on HBO, but he was also behind Disgraced, as he just chronicled before, with Baylor, which was one of the most horrid, painful, poisonous moments, chapters in college sports lore. That was a really, really bad one. You know what really jumped out to me? I don't know why Christian Dawkins was treated as if he was truly like a hardened criminal, like as if he was smuggling heroin, or there was like an underage sex ring. Like, he was treated when they brought him to that I guess like the compound, lack of a better description. I mean, he was with people who truly were detriments to society. And I thought he was woefully miscast in that place. Why did they put him there?
I think so. The jail that he was housed in when he was arrested, it's right across the street from the Southern District, from the federal courthouse on Pearl. And so I think what they tend to do is put people in there so that they can be close to the courthouse when they get arraigned. But yeah, he was in the same facility that El Chapo was housed in, and it's the same facility that Jeffrey Epstein, you know, allegedly committed suicide in, or, you know, whatever you want to believe with that story. But yeah, there's far bigger criminals that are kept in that place than Christian Dawkins was 24, 25 years old at that point when he was arrested.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead, Pat.
What do you think is going to happen downstream of this, Pat? Like, what's happening with the NCAA? They don't have subpoena powers, we all know. What are they going to do about this, and what should like LSU or some of these other schools that are caught up in this, what are they going to do?
I don't think they're going to look. This is the funny part about this is, you know, the government's theory here, the Southern District prosecutors, for there to be a crime, there has to be a victim, right?
Yeah.
And the whole narrative that they sold to, these federal judges and juries in both of these trials was that the schools were the victims here.
Yeah.
They were defrauded. They were the victims. If you look at what's happened, right, we played three calls they're literally under federal seal. They were never played in open court. They've never been played anywhere public before we obtained them from sources and put them in the documentary. LSU has come out and said, no change in Will Wade. Arizona has come out and said, no change in Sean Miller. That right there is the biggest example of how ludicrous this entire thing was, that the schools are victims. Clearly, that LSU in Arizona has done nothing after those wiretap calls are made public shows there that they do not consider themselves victims in something like this.
That's amazing.
So I don't know. I don't know what the NCAA is going to do with this. I really don't understand why these coaches don't come forward and say, look, the rules are outdated. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, this
that would change
in the 60s.
It, right? That yeah, would change it, right? The NCAA was started when amateurism mattered. Amateurism is a fallacy. BNT and I had a discussion about this yesterday. It's nonsense. You're making $1 billion as an entity. There's no amateurism is nonsense, right? So why don't coaches who are making millions and millions of dollars just say, this has got to change. This is capitalism in America, right? We should teach it at a young age. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know why they don't do that. I mean, look, the NCAA makes $1 billion just off of television licensing for March Madness.
That's right. Tournament,
just off of that. They make multiple billions of dollars a year. The schools are, most of these schools, some of these schools, like Louisville, is the most profitable basketball program in the country. They make $42 million a year. The coaches get a cut of these shoe deals that are, some of them are $250 million to these schools. Everybody's getting paid huge sums of money, except for the kids. And I think, I mean, look, you have coaches that are clearly making millions of dollars And for them, why wouldn't they spend money out of their own pockets, right? If they have substantial bonuses tied to making the tournament or going deep into the tournament, and if you're making $3.5-4 million a year and you got to spend $300,000-400,000 out of your own pocket to make another $3 million, of course you're going to do that.
Yep.
Why wouldn't you do that?
Mm-hmm. I would. Might as well just be open about it. I think if all of them said, look, we're all doing this, it is what it is, let's change this rule, the NCAA would seriously have to think about it. Pat, what's going to happen with Christian Dawkins? I mean, he seems to be doing well based on the documentary, but what's happening with him downstream?
I've never heard of a story. I mean, one of the funniest things about Christian is, like, he has all these different things working and he doesn't tell anybody about them. You know, like when he starts a recruiting service when he's 12 years old in his parents' basement, and he's getting Division I coaches to give him $600 to read his scouting report.
And he put himself on the scouting report, right? He said,
yeah, of course. Yeah, names himself number one.
Number one.
Like 3 inches taller than he is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but he doesn't even tell his parents he's doing that. And they have to ask him when checks start coming in the mail, right? So when he's going in this first federal trial, every day that he's leaving, he's just, you know, saying goodbye quickly to Steve Haney, his attorney, and, okay, I'll see you later, I gotta go. Well, he's going up to Midtown in Manhattan and negotiating a record label deal with Atlantic Records. He's never done anything in the music industry before, right? But the story that his mom told me was, when he got out of jail, when he was arrested, he was depressed and knew, okay, if I'm a convicted felon, what industry can I work in that would welcome me with open arms? And, of course, the music industry is one that would do that. So he starts reading books from you know, people like David Geffen and these music moguls, and he just starts, you know, she said he'd read a book a day. And so he's self-teaching himself the music business because he's never worked in it before. And he comes up with a business plan, and Atlantic Records, he negotiated a deal for his own record label.
Wow.
With Atlantic Records.
No,
so Christian's going to be fine.
Yeah. That's
his
amazing.
Mom,
that's
his
awesome.
Mom was really, I liked his mom. His dad obviously coached, and there was some tragedy with his 12-year-old brother who was thought to be the real star on the basketball court. But and we got to go, but I'm curious. Can you do us a favor? You said you're a baseball or a sports fan. Can you jump in, maybe produce something on the Astros cheating scandal? Can you work on that, Pat? Can we get that going?
That's funny. That's a hell of a story right there.
Not funny if you're a Yankee fan.
I don't even think we've seen the full tip of that iceberg yet.
That's right.
God. Well, listen, I watched it two nights ago, and it was awesome. I threw a couple of the tweets out there. Really. The word on the street, it's everybody's really receptive. You know what the word on the street is. It's awesome. Nicely done, man.
Well, thank you guys for talking about it. I appreciate it.
All right, certainly. Pat. Appreciate you, Pat.
There he is.
Pleasure speaking with you.
Yes, sir. You too. Pat Kondilis, award-winning director and producer. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. We'll roll on. We'll get a timeout. And we have about an hour and a half to go. We'll squeeze it. I know we'll do this next hour. Is the replacement for Bill Belichick already in the building? Wow. And being groomed. We'll get to that coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
Bam, 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 bam.
All right, Tiki and everybody. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227. Brought to you by Geico. So whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote, geico.com. You know, I would imagine that you put a piece like this together, you endeavor on a project that is going to be inhaled from every corner of the sporting community. And if it's done right, which the scheme obviously was, it's going to get a ton of attention. Even if it was done half-ass, whatever, it's on HBO. So it's still going to get a lot of run, and it's still about something that people want to talk about. And that's always an interesting line of delineation. What is amateurism, you know, and what should happen to the parties involved that cheat, et cetera. But I'm curious from, you know, Pat's point of view, residually, you have to know that Will Wade's going to look really bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, worse than Miller. And you have to know Miller's going to look pretty bad. And, you know, I wonder if, you know, not that it would be the hope for sure, but that, you know, I can only think if I put this together. Final edit, I'm sitting on my couch or I'm in the production studio and I watch this and I say,
All right, this came out really well. Unfortunately, because this wasn't my mission as I put this together, Will Wade's going to be out of a job. Like, I don't know how you can't watch that before it releases and drops and think that Will Wade would still be coaching the LSU Tigers.
Yeah, well, you know? I mean, it forces Will Wade, ultimately, when he has to right now, he's probably fortunate that the world is kind of in a semi-shutdown because he does, at least a country, he doesn't have to deal with this right now. The schools aren't in session. I mean, they are, but they're all online. The players aren't around, coaches, and so there's time to process this in a sense. But I think if it should get forced to a head, which I think now it has to be, to your assertion, BT, then Will Wade needs to stand up and say what we were just alluding to with Pat. Like, this is how this works, right? We need to challenge this amateurism rule. If you're going to, you know, make certain things, certain stipulations on success and not success and, you know, my contract and, you know, where we want this university to be, and is, in addition to the revenue that comes in from the success of this basketball program, we need to change the way we think about this and force a conversation. And if it's the if it's what he has to do to save his job, then that's what he should do. Mm. You know, too many times these guys, you know, try to take the high road because they're looking forward to their next opportunity, right? Instead of standing up and fighting against the system that's antiquated and has been wrong, I think, for a while. But they just bow out and take their punishment or take their poison or take their medicine and go on, and hopefully they land someplace else. Eventually somebody's going to have to fight it. Maybe it is Will Wade, because this is as damning of evidence as I've ever heard in college basketball as far as illegal recruiting of talent.
I mean, this is bad. But don't you think that, you know, it's better for, you know, one of the established, you know, godfathers of the sport? Shouldn't they? Don't they owe it to the sport? I mean, should Will Wade be the one? Because, well, listen, Will's already made a few million dollars. So as long as you invest it properly, you know, you can survive and more than survive for years. I mean, but Will Wade does not have the bank of a Coach K or Roy Williams or any of these, you know, Mark Few, whomever. Don't you think it would be better served for one of them to be the forefront, the central figure, to try to reverse course here?
I think they're still too focused on what their legacies are going to be.
Well, shame on them then.
In order to do that,
but like this could be a part of their legacy. Well, a real interesting part.
It could be, know? But that's
they
a,
embraced it.
I mean, that's a big ledge to step out
on. No, it's not. Grab a microphone.
It's like a plank. I'm just talking about perceptually. It's a plank that you're walking on because you don't know what the reception is going to be. Right, it could, because in order for a coach, say like Coach K, to get out and talk about how important this is and how the system needs to change, and this has been going on for decades, and we need to look at this differently, he almost has to admit that he's done it himself, right? And then if he does, then that changes how a lot of people are going to perceive him, and so there's a. It's a double-edged sword that you're dealing with right now. If you're a major college coach who knows that this is going on, wants to support some of his brethren, maybe even kind of excuse himself in a sense, but it's just really hard because you don't know what the reaction is going to be.
But I think I could guess what the reaction would be. I think the reaction would be some of the older fans would have an issue with it, but quite frankly, they don't matter as much right now because social media would be overwhelmed with positivity, lauding whether it's Coach K or Roy or whomever stepped, or Coach Izzo or Buddy, whoever stepped out on that ledge. And, you know, social media historically skews young. I think that anybody out there that has followed these stories and the inequitable nature of what the NCAA has and based off what they generate and what the young men and women who actually do the generations, if you will, what they actually have, everybody knows it's nothing remotely congruent. So I think that everybody that is immersed in this story and has some skin on the wall in this story, I think they would really very quickly side with whatever coach stepped on that ledge, because I think we all know it's time.
Yeah, no, it definitely is time. It's only going to become more and more aware. We're going to be more aware of it as these kids stop choosing to go to college, right? We've already seen it to a small extent. Now it's going to really jump to the forefront if the college system from high school, the high school system going into the college changes as dramatically as some people think it might change. Right? They might be recruiting for their survival. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the big names decide if the Zion Williamsons of the world, say 2 years ago, decide to just skip college altogether, it changes college basketball. Because you know that these kids are only going to keep getting bigger and bigger profiles when they're, you know, in 10th and 11th and 12th grade. And now all of a sudden they're playing in Australia and on the Mellow Balls team, you know, and on the other side of the world, because they don't want to play for free in college. It's just going to change. But we know that's going to change. Mm-hmm.
But that still represents an incredibly small number.
Yeah, but also the amount of money that's going, like these big deals, like these $100,000, mm-hmm. you know, payments. It's also a significantly small amount. There's not 100 of these a year. It's probably 20. You know, these guys are getting $100,000. Some of the other kids may be getting much less, but these huge deals that make you open your eyes and go, man, you gave that dude $100,000 or $200,000 and a house and a car? Forget the car. Who cares? I mean, that's insignificant. That's literally insignificant when you think about how much a car costs, even if it's an expensive car over a six-month period. I mean, it's – what are you talking about? You know, $60,000, $50,000 max in lease payments, and that's if you're talking in like a Benz or something.
That's probably coming from a booster who owns three dealerships.
Yeah, that's right. It's probably not even. It's 60. Forget it. It's like $6,000. It's less than $10,000 we're talking about for a car. So who cares about the car? Yeah. But these big numbers are things that I don't think apply to a ton of kids. I think it's, you know, 10 or 20 maybe.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, there's no perfect solution, and you know, you'd have to really crunch the numbers, and that goes without saying. But, you know, the conventional, you sign your national letter of intent, mm-hmm. full room, full board, little stipend. I mean, what if we just came up with a uniform contract or additions to the letter of intent, and one would be maybe additional – I can't come up with a proper. I can't even think holding this microphone. Now I'm holding the microphone because. Can I just show you? I got to show you. I got to show you something. Look at this. Look, I got to get a mic stand, dude. This is driving me nuts. So, the configuration. I know you can't see this on TV, but yeah. I'll describe it. So, in my office, as CBS does a great job trying to get this thing set up, and it looks like we'll have full fledged TV on Monday. So I've got this Monopoly Junior Baseball Edition that Santa brought, right?
Uh-huh.
And then on top of it, I had a big Adidas box from my vintage Five Borough, you know, sneakers that somebody sent me, right? And on top of that is the Army-Navy helmet that Roger Staubach signed for us. One is in the basement. This is the silver one, not the red one that we got this past year.
Yep.
The silver one from 2 years ago that Roger signed on the front that's in my office. And I actually took the microphone and I stuck it like a ninja expertly through the face mask, okay? But the problem is I can't see you because this monstrosity
of a helmet
is obscuring the one laptop that I need to see you. So now during the last break, I dismantled it and I put the helmet down, I took the sneakers down, and I put the Monopoly down, and I just put them back down. Now, I'm trying to hold the microphone. But I'm so not used to holding a microphone
right.
like this doing a show.
It's hard.
That my thoughts are not flowing to my brain.
They're flowing to your hand to keep your microphone.
It's weird.
I had to keep the mic close to your mouth. I hear you.
It's like what, you know, I always fiddle with the microphone in uh-huh. the studio. I like to touch. This is a little different. And it's like, imagine wearing batting gloves and then all of a sudden going up and not wearing them.
Yes.
Or wearing a wristband when you play in the NBA and all of a sudden not. Or whatever. I just feel so different in the last 6 minutes. I know that this sounds insane. But anybody who's ever been on air, or if you're a musician and you play the piano and you sit a certain way and then suddenly you're asked to sit a different way. Boy, the last 5 or 6 minutes, I have not felt like myself. I have not felt like myself.
I didn't notice until you said something.
No, I hear you. But I kept moving things. I don't know if you heard the microphone rattling. At one point, I unplugged it. And I'm saying, hopefully, Tiki finishes this sentence because I got to unplug it to get it out of the face mask. So I can – oh, it was woven into the face mask and wrapped around. What a pain in the behind. All right, coming up, though, we
Talk about trying to salvage the NBA season. We're all trying to salvage just a little slice of the pie. We're not greedy at this point. We'll take a little appetizer. We'll just take a little something, some crumbs here. Well, there is a plan that it will be a truncated playoff format in a certain city. Obviously, it's something, so off the bat, we're receptive to it. But would it really be ideal in crowning a champion? Would we really accept a champion from this sort of tournament, if you will? And we'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
I can't take these memes anymore, Teak. I can't. I'll share one with you in a moment. Hey, tomorrow at 1:30 Eastern, 10:30 Pacific, CBS brings you the inaugural World Team Tennis Celebrity All-Star Match as some of the sport's biggest names serve up some of the best action from the court. All right. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. So, Teak, can you see that, Teak?
Yeah.
So if that was a meme, as my buddy just said, if that was a meme for 2020, it's the Tiger King resting his head very softly on the massive shoulder of the gentleman who is also known for something else that is incredibly massive. Who, by the way, I guess he's passed away.
Did he
know
really?
The story behind the you know what I'm talking about? The guy,
yeah, of
I'm
course.
Not sure of his name. The guy who's all in all the memes, and he's incredibly well
endowed.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
This big African American guy looks like he could play linebacker, absolutely jacked. And then it came to light. Somebody was trying to do a story on him. Mm-hmm. I guess he was in some movies back in the early 2010s or whatever it was, and they found out that he passed away. But he's become a constant meme. And this one between the Tiger King, just like so, you know, wistfully with his head on his shoulder, is enough to make you crack up / jump out of a window. I mean, you can only live on this stuff so much.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
That's why I try to ignore it as much as possible.
Yeah, but you
which
can't
is easier said than done, because it pops up everywhere.
It does,
no matter what you do, whether it's your friend sending it to you.
That's the thing. I'm not looking for it.
That's right. You
I'm
just
not
hit
looking
you.
For it. It's just you pop up. What do? You have several different text chains, and
yep.
You do what you do during each down period, and you check your email, and you check By the way, what did the stock market do today? I didn't even see it.
I haven't looked at all, and I don't even know if I want to. At this point, with the stock market, I'm playing the long game.
Yeah,
that is, don't look at it for a long time.
Yeah, it's
because it's not gonna, you're not gonna be satisfied.
No, down. Dow was down 360. The Nasdaq was down 114. I mean, listen, the numbers are plummeting, and they're gonna get lower. And unemployment is rising. This is serious stuff, man. I mean, I don't know what this does do before we get to this NBA possible solution for the NBA playoffs / crowning a champion. You know, what it does do, don't you think it's got to give you, outside of just a textbook of, from what we read as kids, you have to have a sense now of, at least on some level, a modicum of what the Great Depression was like.
Yeah, a little bit, but I don't think we're not even close to that because
I
of where,
I know, but
the wealth in this country and I guess in some ways, yes, because it's the lack of distribution of wealth in this country gets exacerbated in times like this, especially with people losing jobs or being put on furlough or taking pay cuts or whatever it may
be. Checks from the government to survive.
Whatever it may be. And in a sense, you do because of the haves and have-nots in the country. But I don't think anything compares to the Great Depression. Even the top end. That 1% that everyone always alludes to, they were struggling in dire straits.
Mm. The 1% too?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, some people capitalized on it, but.
Yeah, they just go the other way. But, all right. Let's see here, Teak. What do we got? So, I don't know if this is viable if it will prove to be viable, but the NBA could salvage the season with a condensed playoff tournament in. Here we go. Back to the city with more germs than any city in the country, I would imagine. Las Vegas. A traditional postseason format seems out of the realm of the possibility for the NBA. Now,
because it takes too long, as we talked about a couple days ago. It's probably, a month and a half at least?
Oh, for sure.
Even if they condensed it to make the series, all series, five games, or it's still going to take, a month and a half.
No doubt. No doubt. Chris Mannix wrote this. He said, quarantining in one location is the only solution, and Vegas is the only city currently giving any kind of consideration per an NBA source. sending 16 teams to Las Vegas to play games in a hollow arena is not ideal, but it could evolve into a fun one-time event that would bring the game back and, more importantly, get the TV revenue flowing. Players would likely resist the idea of all being decamped under one roof. LeBron James already has, but the bet is if it means the paychecks keep coming and the champion is crowned, then they'll come around. Even without a team, Las Vegas has become a major NBA market. Soon it could get even bigger. All right, so aside from the logistics, which, again, you and I touched on the other day, let's push this forward in a different direction. Let's say there's not a single regular season game played again this year, and that looks as if that's the way it's going to go. And boom, wherever you are now, 1 through 8, each conference, slot it out. Boom, let's go. We'll play in playoffs here. And there is a champion crowned. I mean, how dubious do you think the average fan would be in fully legitimizing whoever emerges from this tournament?
Yeah, you're right. I think this becomes a easily asterisked championship because somebody is just not going to adapt well to having had a month off or 2 months off at this point by the time this thing ultimately would happen. And you can't get together. You're not really working out. I mean, some of these guys are, you know, doing their individual workouts, but not working out as teams. And so that rust factor will be significant. It's why the NBA season is kind of a really good length because it has its stages where you figure out who you are. You get your midseason adjustments. Mm-hmm. You get to the All-Star break, and you've had that final third rush where you hone in. Now all of a sudden you're restarting, probably back to midseason, trying to find yourself. And some teams are going to be better be better at it. Other teams are not. And I don't know. I mean, I guess this would be worth it just to see basketball, see a live competition.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I could validate the results and say, yeah, they were the true champion of the season. You'd never forget it. You know what I mean? Not that anybody's ever going to forget this year, because I don't think any of us have ever had a situation where we've had to literally be inside for 90% of the days and see nobody for 3 weeks.
No,
so we're going to remember this for a long time, but we'll also not give as much love and appreciation for the team that ultimately wins, because we know that the circumstances are so different and unique.
Yeah, although I don't really hear the 99 championship with the San Antonio Spurs who beat the Knicks 4-2. I don't really hear that.
Yeah, but it didn't affect our lives. That didn't affect our lives.
But it was a condensed season.
I know that, but it wasn't an effect on our lives.
No, I understand that, but I don't know that how the champion is perceived this year is correlated to the impact on our lives. I'm talking about mainly just like a tricked up tournament. Like, all right, let's all go to this one city and, you know, wherever you reside seed wise now, that's where you're going to go. So we almost, I don't know.
Let me think, because that I forget that 99 season was shortened. I really do.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But this one, whatever happens in 2020, you're not going to forget the circumstances of 2020.
It's
going to stick out in your
one
mind.
One was labor and one was real life.
Yeah, now that's right. One was labor. It was kind of like, dude, that's your own fault. You guys are idiots for not getting the thing done before it became a work stoppage situation. This is, man, we're all quarantined in a sense, and we're all stuck inside. And yeah, I know we can't go, hang out with our friends and have beers and stuff at the local pub, but you guys can't even practice.
No.
So we're going to remember this one. It's going to stick out no matter what happens, whether it's a complete cancellation or they find some way to create a tournament that crowns a champion. You know, it's going to stick.
Yeah. You know, Giannis talked about this here, because I think that there's this belief that, well, every one of these guys has a palatial mansion.
Yeah.
And of course they all have money, but not every player has a house. Some live in beautiful high-rise condo penthouses. And guess what? Some of those penthouses have basketball courts or those condo facilities, at the basement in the basement, and some don't. And Yana said, I haven't shot a basketball since the last time I was wearing a Buck uniform because I don't have access to a hoop.
Yeah.
And that's Giannis who's making all this bank. What about the second year guy who's living in, a nice apartment, but and is stuck in a city where there's no access. I mean, the competition, it's going to be sloppy.
Yeah.
And not only is the NBA going to be sloppy, Teague, you have to really start thinking about, Just what will the NFL begin to represent? I mean, how sloppy will that first month be?
We've been
tackles.
Yeah, dude, I've been railing about this for years because of the truncation of the offseason and how the fundamentals don't get worked on because you don't have time. And the fact that they've cut out two-a-day practices and hitting is limited to a certain amount of days. And it's like, of course you get into the regular season in early September and it's, you know, missed tackle after missed tackle after missed tackle or, you know, ugly execution games on offense, on the offensive and defensive side because they haven't done it. They haven't executed it. And if this thing in with the NFL gets pushed as long as it seems like it's going to get pushed, because we're talking July now already before we even start thinking about coming back. And if it gets into August and September and these guys got to start playing to fit the season in without training camps, I mean, football's going to be disgusting.
Well, in case you forgot, if you haven't looked at the standings in a while, back to the NBA real fast, it will be the Bucks and the Magic, 1-8, Raptors, Nets, 2-7, Celtics, Sixers, 3-6, 4-5, Heat, Pacers, and out west you would have the Lakers and the Grizzlies, the Clippers, Dallas, pretty good 2-7 matchup.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And that'll be good. 3-6 will be the Nuggets and the Rockets.
That's another good one, too.
And the Jazz and the OKC Thunder, who have overachieved for sure in the 4-5 matchup, if there's even a season. Well, eventually there's going to be a new coach in the NFL for the Pats. Eventually. Is the guy already in the building? We'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, right here on this Friday, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.